Shalom, everyone, and we are starting a new cycle of the study of the five books of Moses of the Chumash. We have a whole year in front of us, the year of 5786, and it is a very big challenge to teach Parashat Bereshit. So much was written about Parashat Bereshit, but beforehand, about the coming year. 6 years ago, when we just started this decade of 5780 and on, I said that according to the Kabbalistic study, the number 780, which means we are in the sixth millennium, and this is the decade that is starting with 780, this is a very special decade because the number 780 is a very famous number. It's coming from the word mazala, the upper flow, mazal, which is a very bad translation. English is very poor having that idea, but the word mazala, 78, it is three times the name of God, the Tetragrammaton. 26 times 3 is 78. 10 times 10 sefirot, which means this number symbolizes the what we know also the flow of the 13 attributes, which the 13 attributes are called in the Kabbalistic teachings the 13 threads of white light. Which means, again, the emanation of the original light of the source. When that light shines, all of God's will is going to be manifested. What is God's will? God's will is, as it's being mentioned, maybe, I don't know, it's like many times. In many places, the will of God is to share with his creation. The will of God is to give. And that will, that giving, is manifested with the number 780, 780, which means during this decade, it was really clear that the way humanity perceives itself, the way we all see our reality is going to be drastically changed. And during the last few years, we have seen since 6 years ago, very drastic change in the world, politics, culture, social structures, everything, the way we know it, is changing in a very fast pace. And that means the coming year is going to be also an accelerated transformation of humanity. But you have to remember how stressful it feels like, how confusing it looks like, how hard to understand what's happening. Most people reveal a lot of shock and fear inside themselves because things are changing so fast. But we have to understand something very important. 2 years ago, this week, 2 years ago, some people call it the October 7th or the Simchat Torah, Shabbat Simchat Torah, the massacre of Shabbat Simchat Torah. We had a beginning of a terrible war that started with a terrible massacre that, by the way, could have been, as I said 2 years ago, was supposed to be much worse than that, with horrible results. What we experienced in Israel 2 years ago was just a little tiny bit of the prophecy that was written in the Zohar about about Iran taking control for 12 months over the whole country of Israel. That was sweetened. This judgment had been sweetened into a very few hours of control and massacre and killing and atrocities that haven't been seen since the Holocaust, even worse than that. However, we have to understand where is this coming from. Just if we go to the writings of the Ari Rabbi Isaac Luria on the Gate of Meditations, when the Arizal is explaining about the miracle of Purim. And the Arizal is explaining, Rabbi Isaac Luria, that when a great light, especially the light of redemption, is supposed to be revealed, that light is so much bigger than the vessels of us humans. That light, when it's putting pressure to be revealed, it can, I'm just making it short, but you can look if you have access to the Arizal about Purim, the beginning of his explanation. That awesome light of redemption, of light, power, enlightenment, when it's coming to be revealed, the vessel is not ready, and therefore, it being shown in the beginning as a very big trouble that is painful beyond imagination. Now, what we're just explaining, there's a great light of goodness, positivity, goodwill, and whatever is good that is being revealed. However, sometimes that awesome light, when it's pushing its way through, it breaks the vessel. So the vessel, when it is being broken, it by the process of repair, it's rebuilding itself the same way when somebody wants to build muscles. He has to tear his muscles, which means put overwhelming pressure over his muscles, and then the muscles somehow tear up, and when they rebuild, you get a bigger muscle and more powerful, potent muscle. What happened in Purim, like 26 centuries ago, in Persia, 25 centuries ago, it was not just Persia, it was from all the way from India till Africa. The Persian Empire was that big. What happened then, it just, we can say it's smaller. The intensity, the power, the size of the miracle is much bigger nowadays. And one day, there's going to be a whole book that is going to be competitive to the book of Esther, describing the biblical events happening around us. 2 years ago, Israel was attacked, and all demons of hatred, antisemitism, the desire to kill, destroy, bring chaos everywhere, have been seen out in the, became loose. And I think that many, many, many people around the world started to feel fear, anxiety, understanding that darkness is getting so strong that some of the books of George Orwell, like The Animal Farm and 1984, we're starting to see the same patterns in front of our eyes, how evil is taking over and taking over the lives of people who thought their lives are free and independent. And you realize it's not so. A year ago, just a year into the war, a great shift happened, and just a year ago, Hamas got the blow. Hezbollah got a blow. Syria is not anymore a puppet state of the Iranians. And we can see how the evil is starting to collapse, although still it is strong around us. We have to embrace ourselves because we're just in the middle of that decade. We have 4 years to go. With tremendous changes. Again, we have to remember the idea is that the many times when we need to grow and we are not aware, we are not participating with the bigger picture of the great good being revealed in front of our eyes, humanity is being restructured in a different way we never knew before, because the number 780, that's what behind it. It's a better, more generous, more loving society. However, in order to reach that, there's a very strong sense of growth that we have to participate with that growth. And we have to be really careful, as I warned many, many times, not to follow all the doomsday prophecies coming from scientists or people call themselves analysts, you name it. There's so many people who just saying that, just prophesizing doom. It's not doom. We are going to see by the end of that decade a much better humanity with much better relationships, much better economy, much better everything. But that is in the middle of the creation, and we have to remember again the Kabbalistic idea that the sweetest fruit, when it is still on the tree, it is still very bitter, very hard, very colorless, or maybe very deep green, doesn't look like anything of that fruit when it is ripe. You need to be smart, because who is wise? The one who can see ahead what is coming. So with that idea, we can start the study of Bereshit of 78, 57, 8, 80, 86. Okay, so when we are coming to the amazing words of Bereshit bara Elohim et hashamayim ve'et ha'aretz, just the beginning, and which Bereshit, there are so many ways to translate it into English, it doesn't mean in the beginning. The simplest translation is at the head of things. God created the heaven and the earth. Now, the idea that the world was created, which means the world did not exist forever, that idea came to modern science just less than 100 years ago. It became the most accepted idea only 60 years ago. It is a very young idea in the history of humanity, okay? In the history of modern science. However, we are talking here about a very old idea, an ancient idea, which means the whole idea that the world was created, that the world is a new thing relatively, this is what we talk about in the book of Genesis. Now, the word Bereshit, there are many ways to look at it. There is a whole Zohar that is called Tikkuni Zohar. It's a separate volume of the Zohar that has 70 commentaries over the word Bereshit, 70, 7-0. It's a whole book by itself. With the commentary, it can be like a few volumes. It's a very, very powerful book, and it shows how the word Bereshit is basically a code for the DNA of the universe. So now it's a very kind of a challenging idea. It's like, how do you explain in something like an hour the whole book of the first parasha, the book of Bereshit, which is huge. It covers around 1,000 years from the creation of Adam. And it covers also all the time before the creation of Adam, which is described here as 7 days. But the way it is written, it was not really 7 days, because the definition of a day was created only on the fourth day. Just to remind you, if you read the simple text. Okay, so we have no other option like to listen to all the great sages that say the story of the creation is more than a code, is merely a code. You cannot read it simply and say, oh, that's the way it happened, just because of the contradictions in the text. As I said again, the sun and the moon and the stars were created only on the fourth day, according to the book of Genesis. Okay, if they were created on the fourth day, how can you count a day? Because our definition of a day is the time it takes to the earth to make one complete circle relatively to the sun, if the sun is only created on the fourth day. So how come there was a day on the first, second, and third days? So we have a problem over here, and I think you don't have to be really a very, very, very smart person to notice that. It's a very simple idea. You just read the text. Okay, so we understand that what the scholars were saying for so many millennia, that you cannot explain the story of the creation simply by the way it's written. And there are many, many rules that say also the timing. We're not talking about a real story, we're talking about a code. And I'll give you a little bit of the code at first. Of all, that it is a code. When you just read and that the first chapter, chapter one, the creation, the 6 days creation. And first of all, when you read the most ancient text about the creation, the Book of Formation, the Book of Formation that Jewish tradition says that Abram, the patriarch, he created that book. Okay, so how did he have access to the chapter one of Genesis that was revealed many years after? But let's talk about it, and it says very clearly, it sets some basic rules, and it speaks about one thing that we can find in the story of Genesis, chapter one. First of all, the book of Formation starts with the words "Bishloshim u'shtaim netivot pliot, with 32 paths of wonders of wisdom. God, the many names of God, God engraved and created his world. These are like some of the words of the beginning of the Book of Formation. And what are these 32 paths of wisdom? And the answer is that if you count how many times the name of God is being mentioned in chapter one of Genesis, it is 32 times. Now, these 32 times also are divided because there are also, it says 10 times, and God, And God said, 10 times. 10 times God said, that relates to the 10 sefirot of the tree of life. What does it mean? How, it's a very simple idea. It's like, how did God say? Just think about the idea of saying. When we say, is because we have lungs, we have a mouth, we have vocal cords, we have all these basic parts that allow us to talk. So when we say something, is we activate those tools. Does God, the creator, the infinite creator of the universe, has a mouth? Does he have, so we understand that the word say is not related to the way we say things, because, okay, you need also air. If we're talking about before the big creation, there's no air. Oh, by the way, and you don't say anything if there's nobody listening to you. Okay, so how did God say? So you can think about saying, there must be another way of understanding the word to say. For instance, when you use the word in Hebrew, it's a the word emor, amira. It's like it's also in English a statement. Okay? You can make a statement without saying anything. For instance, you're an artist. Okay? So one artist has his statement is a statue that he carves in wood or in stone or other materials. Another one, it's a painting on canvas. Another one paints on stones. Another one, he's saying is he's an architect, and his statement is a building that he created. Okay, that's a statement. That's amira in Hebrew, which means basically, if you want to understand what does it mean, a saying or a statement means you want to deliver something. You want to deliver a feeling, because otherwise you're not an artist. An artist is delivering it. And the way God is being called in many, many, many texts, and even here in the Book of Formation, is Tzur HaOlamim. Tzur could mean a very hard stone, but also in many places, it's coming from the word sayar, the painter of the world, the artist of the universe. So the question is, what is God's statement? And the answer is very simple. We go back to that primordial idea that when we are talking about a creator that created the universe, we're talking about the creator and as a monotheistic creator. Which means, according to monotheism, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and a lot of people claim to be monotheists. I'm not so sure they're really monotheists. We are talking about a creator that is infinite force of light, infinite force of good. How do we know it's good? Because it's a positive force. That force expands and makes a statement. Okay, how does it expand? First of all, the number here is 10 sayings of God, which means that basically hints for a universe that has about 10 emanations. What do I mean an emanation? Because the difference between an infinite force and an emanation that you can count, sfira means in Hebrew emanation, it means also count. Which means you can decipher, you can discern between one emanation to another. What does it mean? A limit. Because without a limit, there's no creation. Nothing new happened. So let's read the legendary words of the Zohar, the beginning of the Zohar of Parashat Bereshit, and the words in Aramaic, Bereshu menuta de malka galif glufei bitihiru ila'a, butzina de kardinuta venafek gostim distimu, meraza de ensof kutra begulma na'itz beizka, lachivar velaucham velasumak velayarok. ולה גוון כלל, כת מדד משיכה, אבד גוונין לנערה, לגו, בגו בוצינה. נפק חד נביאו, דמיני צטבעו, גוונין לתתה. This is also a code, a riddle, okay? But if we just try to understand the main idea, in the beginning of the revelation of God's will, of the will of the king, basically, that's what the Zohar is saying. The king of the universe, which means when the king had that desire to emanate and to create the universes, okay, he, first of all, he engraved an engraving. What does that mean? And the moment we say an engraving, we are talking about, till now, there is infinite light. And from now on, there is something that basically, you know, let's say there's a stone and you engrave on the stone. You created a new limit. You created a new boundary. There's a line. There's a dot, there's a triangle, there's a circle, okay? We say engraving. You created a something that is limiting in the previous, relatively to the previous state, okay? And that's why it's called like it is an engraving. So the light. So before the creation, there was the supreme light, the infinite light, that fills reality. And then the creation was basically about creating a limitation. So the moment you say emanation, you say two words, shining light and engraved, which means it is limited. You can see that the light that was before was infinite. The light that is now is engraved. It is limited. That's the meaning of the word sefira in Hebrew. It's a manage, it's a illumination within a limitation. So when we are talking about that, so we have 10 times, and God said, let there be. Okay, 10 times. 10 emanations. But we have 32 times the word, the name of God. Each one of them is showing about another path of power descending from above, from the infinite, and that these 32 forces within the structure of 10 emanations, they're basically, let's say, 10, if you take 32 minus 10, you get 22 letters. 22 letters of the Hebrew alphabet, which there are also, each one of them is, how do you create a letter? You engrave. You take a white paper, a white board, or anything that is smooth, and you engrave on it a new boundary, okay? How is that related to the creation itself? Because there are no smooth boards to engrave on them. So just if you think about that there is an emanation of light, but the light, when it emanates and expands, it creates a vessel that will receive that light and will be fulfilled by that light. What is that vessel? That's when it says in the beginning, in Genesis chapter 1, verse 5, and there was a night, there was a day, one day. What is the night? The night is about darkness. And we know that the creation is darker than the creator. The creator is infinite light. So as long as there is only infinite light, there's no creation. But the infinite light, which its nature is to expand like the physical light, but you cannot expand into nothing. So the expansion of that infinite light, the giving of that infinite light, creates something that can receive that light. And that is basically the main idea of the creation. Because if you ask scientists, so what created the Big Bang? Which means here we're talking about having an infinite force, but the only way that that infinite force will be one, okay? We see that in the Zohar. Remember, the Zohar is thousands of years old. Okay? And the Zohar was Torah Shebaal Peh, which means the oral law, then the wisdom of the understanding of the Torah that was given on Mount Sinai to the whole nation of Israel. So the Zohar is not new. What's new that it was written later on. Okay? But that is a manifestation of the understanding of the five books of Moses already through the beginning. That's Jewish tradition. It's not new. Otherwise, if the Zohar was new, that's not the Torah. So, how dare you come and invent a new idea? And what does it say? That when you say there was a night, there was a day, one day. And the question is, how can the night and the day be one? They're opposite to each other. They're opposite to each other. They're far away from each other as far can be. One is night, one is day. One could be the creator, and the other one is the creation. One is the light, and one is the vessel that that light expands into. So the Zohar continues. Verse 2 in the Zohar, Sulam Bereshit, Stim Gostet Satimin Merazad Ensof, Baka, Velo Baka, Avira Delay Light Yadakla Ademigor, Dechiku de Vekiute, Naher Nekuda Chada Stima Ila. It's almost impossible to translate this riddle. I'll try to do my best, okay? So then the one that is hidden from all that is hidden, the one that is coming from the secret of the infinite, the Ein Sof. What does it mean in infinite? Ein Sof, no finite, no boundaries. Okay? That one emanated two structures. Okay. However, that brought into being one point hidden that you cannot understand. That point cannot be known. What does it mean? So Rabbi Ashlag explains, the founder of the modern Kabbalah movement, and the author of the Zohar commentary, the biggest ever, the first ever. And he says very simple. The moment you say that the world, everything is one, okay? Again, Genesis chapter 1, verse 5. How could everything be one? The only way we can describe one in our brain is a dot. Why? Because something that is bigger than a dot is not one anymore. Why? Because the moment I can measure a distance between two dots, could be even 1 millimeter far away from, it's already not one. It's already at least two. That's not one. So the only way you can understand that there was the day, there was a night, there was a day, one day, that everything was one, you can use that, you can understand that idea is only by the idea, geometrical idea of a dot. Only a dot has no dimensions. It doesn't have a width, or not a depth, and not a height. Okay? Only, so the only way you can explain the infinite is with a dot. So that is the dot that the universe is starting from. However, that dot included already everything, the infinite. And what is that infinite that is included? There was a night, there was a day. So we can find Rashi saying that very clearly. Rashi, the greatest commentator of the Torah, he lived in France, the end of the 11th century. When he says, second. He says basically, I think I marked it and I can't find it. Basically, what Rashi is mentioning, and we see it in the Kabbalistic text also, when it says there was a night, there was a day, on the first day, it means that everything was already created. Everything was already again created. Everything was there already. Let me explain that. So we need the Zohar for that. We'll go back to the Zohar, to Rabbi Ashlag's commentary. And for that, Rabbi Ashlag is bringing the most amazing words of Rabbi Isaac Luria, the Arizal, 16th century. And he says as follows. Before the emanated beings have been emanated, and before the creatures have been created, there was the divine expanding light filling up all of reality. And there was no place, space, from creating anything because everything was already there. Nothing, there was nothing there to create, to change, to move, to develop. And there was no beginning and no end. It was all one simple expanding equal light. By the way, that power, that energy, when it was discovered, the radiation of the Big Bang was discovered in the 60s. Only then science finally accepted the Big Bang theory as the main theory of the creation of the world. And what was that, the radiation that was discovered, that's the radiation the field that fills the whole universe equally in every point of the whole creation. That was the proof. And we are talking about that simple light that filled the whole creation equally. And that light is called O En Sof, the light of the Ein Sof. וכשעלה ברצונו הפשוט לברוא עולמות ולהציל הנאצלים, and when God willed, desired, remember you have to understand the word רצון in Hebrew has a double meaning. One is desire, which means a lack. God does not have a lack. One is ריצוי, appeasement. And of course, when it says רצון about the creator, it is about appeasement. What's appeasement? When you give somebody his fulfillment. So from when we are talking about the word רצון, which is a very, very important pillar of understanding, the creation, from God's point of view, רצון means how much the creator is giving. From our point of view, is how much do we receive? And you have to understand, it's the same thing. Because we cannot receive more than how much God wants to give us. God will never give us more than we can receive. Okay? And that's when it says that we were created in his image, towards the end of the chapter. We're not talking about the physical image. We're talking about a mental image. Okay? God is the giver, we are the receiver. God is the light, we are the darkness. It's all about relativity. Right here, the beginning of the theory of relativity. There was a light and there was a night, there was a day, which means creation is the night. The creation is the same way any material, physical material, is dark relatively to the physical light. Okay, the same way. The vessel itself, the creation. Again, why is it darker? Because if the will of the creator is to share, appease, fulfill, give. Why? Because whoever is good is the nature of the good is to give, to expand. Therefore, we were created as a spitting image of God's will to share, which means whatever we, just a very simple idea. What comes first? The fulfillment or the desire? Most people jump and say the desire. First you desire, then you can do whatever is possible to achieve the fulfillment. But the Kabbalist is saying, how do you know what to desire if you were not fulfilled with that pleasure beforehand? How do you know? How can you desire chocolate if you never tasted chocolate in your life? How can you desire a mango if you never tasted the mango? Which means the fulfillment comes before. Which means when you taste the first time chocolate or a mango or peach, whatever, anything, and first you taste, you give it a try, and then you experience the fulfillment. The craving is a result of experiencing the fulfillment already, which means how do we, humans, creatures of desire, know what we want and desire and crave for only because the infinite light of the Creator expanded. And through his expansion, he created us as creatures of desire, creatures of will. And therefore, the word that we mentioned, engraving, it's like the light engraved itself in each human soul when it expanded. The first stage, everything was one. There was a night, there was a day, one day. However, we have a little problem over here. And what is the problem over here? The problem is that because, as we mentioned before, we were created in the image of God. The giving of the Creator is infinite because He is the infinite. We can say that the Creator cannot be less than infinite. So when He expanded, and by that we were created as His mirror image, Okay? He could not give us less than himself, and therefore he imprinted himself in us. And therefore, when it says that he created us in his image, we know that image is a finite by definition. You know, the word for image is definition, a defined image. And we talk about the infinite. So how can God has an image unless we're talking about a mental image? And I explained it many, many times. You can explain the mental image of the creator in three different aspects. This is the easiest way. Okay? One, he is the creator and he's independent. Nobody tells him what to do. And therefore, a healthy human being doesn't like to be told what to do. A healthy human being cannot stand dependency. Healthy human beings cannot stand limitation because this is dependency. Okay? Therefore, you cannot find dependent, happy people, which means that the moment I say that my happiness is dependent on a human being, a material, money, you just name it. In that moment, this is an oxymoron, which means you cannot be happy and dependent at the same time, because that is against the image of God engraved in each one of us. The second aspect is creativity. The creator is very creative, and that's why it's easier to find happy people among creative people. Almost impossible to find happy, lazy people, because if you're lazy, it means you're far, far away from the image of the creator. How could that be? We'll talk about it. And then the third aspect is giving. God is a great giver. I never met happy, selfish people. Impossible. Why? It's against your image. So the question, how could things deteriorate so much for the question of why there's so much evil in the world? Why there's so much darkness and confusion in the world? Why is it so hard to create happiness in this world? And the answer is very simple. The creation was completed already, and there was a night, there was a day, one day. One day. One means echad, there's no other. Okay? The creation was completed. Since we were created in the image of God, the creation in that point, that's exactly the point. One point, the middle point, the point that a big bang happened out of that point. Okay? The only text talking about that point was the biblical text. If you say, and there was a night, there was a day, one day, the only way to explain it, if the creator and the creation are one, only by the idea of one point. So what, which means the creator and the creation were totally one. At that time, you cannot speak about time. Science is teaching us there's no time at that point. That point with a big P, the point. Okay? So what happened? The moment you want to be in the image of your creator, you cannot do that when everything is one. You cannot create when everything is complete and one. You cannot share when everything is complete and one. Therefore, the second day, and in Hebrew, sheni, it's also the same shoresh, root source, as shone, different, shoni, differentiation. So God, what did God create on the second day? He created the separation. He created the differentiation. He created the distance. That's why it doesn't say that God saw that it was good. Because it's not good. Which means, where does evil really start? On the second day. The moment there is a second, the moment there is a differentiation, the moment there is a distance between God, the Creator, and His creation. But that distance is a must. Same way when a child is growing with a very powerful, creative, dominant parent, many times the child needs to remove himself far away. And people say that, Dad, let me shine. Let me shine. The same way when the Zohar says Moses wanted to come with the Israelites to the land of Israel, and God says, no. The sun must set so the moon and the stars can shine. We need to shine because we were created in the image of the God, which is the creator, which is the origin of shining. We need to shine, and the only way we can shine in when is when there is darkness. So darkness is the removal of the vessel from the light. That is already the second day when God separates and separates and separates. And that's why the whole story of the book of Bereshit is how, from a perfect state of one point means infinity, infinite light of the Creator with infinite vessels, infinite souls, all in a perfect unity and harmony. And then you need to break it down. You need to break it down to so there will be a place for us to shine, to create, to give, to share, to overcome the darkness. So we talk about the creation of that variety of creation, all of that. You have the Garden of Eden, and you have many kinds of animals. It's not about really how the world was created. We are talking about the evolutionary process. Remember, here is the beginning of the idea of evolution, because the second day evolved from the first day. So what happened on the first, second day? The separation between the creator and his creation. Separation. Separation gives us the place to evolve. On the third day, was a very important creation. When is separation good? When you use the separation to create a synthesis. And that's the third day. The third day is talking about synthesis. Photosynthesis is green. Life is based on photosynthesis, the color green. The color green si symbolizes in the Kabbalistic text, in Judaism, the synthesis between the right and the left, the light and the darkness, the giving and the receiving. That's green. That's a vegetation. So how could the vegetation be created on the third day when the sun and the moon, whatever, were created on the fourth day? Because we're not talking about those objects as the sun and the moon as the sun. We are talking about the symbols of evolution of the idea of creating a space in which we have human beings fighting the darkness in order to generate light, fighting confusion in order to generate wisdom and understanding. This is basically what the book of Genesis is about, especially chapter the first parasha, Parashat Bereshit. So we can just to get an idea. Which I'm just touching just to give an idea and a feel. Okay. So, I'm going to read a little bit from, I like to read from the Nachmanides. The Nachmanides, he was born in Catalonia, today Spain. Okay. He was one of the greatest Kabbalists ever. He was forced to run away from Catalonia, and he came to made Aliyah to Israel. We're talking about 13th century. And here he passed away. And his books, I'm going to read his commentary on the beginning. And he says, "V'atashma we have to explain the meaning. God created all creatures. Me'afisa muchletet. From nothing. God created everything from nothing. And this is the first, we're talking about the creation of something out of nothing. Okay? And the word bara, bereshit, which again, translated usually as in the beginning, but it starts with the word bara. Bara means created something out of nothing. The next word is again bara, bereshit bara. You can hear the word repeating itself. And he says, but avalotzi mina efes hagamur, he brought out from the absolute zero, yesod dat meod, a very, very fine substance, and bamamash, it's not really something, but it's a beginning of something. It's a beginning as muhan lekabel tzura, it's ready to receive a form to come out from potential into actual. That is the first original matter. The Greeks call it hiyuli. After the Hiyuli, he did not create anything. Okay, what is the Nachmanides saying? Saying the only creation was a very basic substance, okay, that exact has no form, but it's a the beginning of physical matter. Today we know that after the Big Bang, there was in the beginning a very basic energy that was a condensed power. It was not, there was so much energy, and it was so condensed, it did not even have, of course, it didn't have atoms yet. It's something that comes before that. Now, the sages are saying, what is that? That's when it says in the Torah, Tohu Vavohu, translated by mistake into chaos. No, it's two words in Hebrew. Tohu, so the whole thing of saying in the beginning there was chaos, it's a mistranslation. Tohu, in the regular Hebrew, you say when you want to say something is chaotic, Tohu Vavohu. But that's not what it means. Maybe it's because the translation into European languages that somebody decided to do to translate it this way. But the word is, it's basically made of two words, tohu vavohu. Tohu means in Hebrew, I think even Rashi says that, tohu means okay, the Nachmanides is saying that original pre-matter force, okay, is called Tohu. Why Tohu? Because the word Tohu means wonder. Which, what do I mean wonder? When the mind wonders because the mind cannot, we have to remember, human brain needs definitions boundaries in order to have a conception, to understand a concept, a picture. All is about boundaries. So when you look at something that has no boundaries and no structure, you are in wonder. That's tohu. That's a primordial force. Bohu is when this primordial force starts to condense into structures, atoms. Okay? Atoms are already structured. Okay? That's bohu. Bohu means there's something in it. Oh, I can get it. Okay? So what the Nachmanides is saying, the creation was a beginning, like original substance, that is not, the human brain cannot perceive it, cannot understand it, but it's primordial force. That's the only thing that was created. The word bara means about creating something out of nothing. Then after that, the verbs being used are yatsar ve'asa, formed and made. Which means already after the original matter was created, the original creation was created, now there's no creation anymore, only formation. That's called evolution, when the original power is being formed step by step till it gets different shapes. That's the word yatsar ve'asa, formed and made. Okay? What does it leave us with? There was only one creation of something out of nothing. That was the first substance that was just in the beginning. Okay? That did not, and which means that from that moment on, and if you go to the Zohar and later on to other Kabbalistic writings, from there, that moment on, there is an evolution, which means when the original substance is evolved into higher structures, when the original cloud of energy starts to get shapes that you call them atoms and molecules, and later on, structures that are higher than that, let's say stones. Planets, whatever you call it. Okay? All of that is an evolutionary process. There's no more creation of something out of nothing. So the moment you say that, you realize that the animals were not created something out of nothing, and not the vegetation, and not the planets, and not the galaxies. All of them evolved from their original primordial substance in an evolutionary process called in Hebrew hishtalshelut. Hishtalshelut means step by step, like a chain that is made of many units. Okay? So, but what we see through that, another thing, that's the major understanding. We create a separation so we humans can synthesize the right with the left, the light with the darkness. And then the Garden of Eden is being created, in which we understand that humanity in the first stage, their creativity was in a higher form, because, by the way, to remind us, we cannot find any botanical garden or nursery that has the tree of life and the tree of knowledge growing over there. These are the only two trees in the Garden of Eden, mentioned in the Garden of Eden before the sin. Only two trees. So we are not talking about physical trees. We are talking about ideas. Abstract ideas, okay? And Adam and Eve, of course, were not physical beings. They were also ideas. So why do we have the sin of Adam? Because that's part of the evolution. The whole story of the creation is about how from a perfect unified universe, one point that is totally harmonious came out evil. And the Parsha of Bereshit is just giving us kind of an outline that there is a production of that idea that is called evil. So it symbolizes the snake, and later on, Cain and Abel, and later on about the evil inclination mentioned at the end of the parsha. Why? Because the only way we humans create light out of darkness, the only way we can be independent on our own, the only way we can give as creators, and it has a meaningful idea of giving, is when there is darkness, when there is the misunderstanding, when there is a conflict, when something is broken, then you can appreciate yourself by fixing it. So the whole idea of the universe is about one thing. There's one purpose. There's a purpose for the creation. That's the difference between the Jewish concept of the creation and scientific concept of the creation. Both start with an infinite universe that is in one point. The modern idea of science is only 100 years old. 100 years old only. The Jewish idea is thousands of years old. And another difference is that here there's a purpose. Here there's no purpose. And if we want to understand what is the World War III about, that many scholars, I'm talking about scientists, people who research humanity, historians, a lot of people say we are already in the beginning of World War III. Okay? To tell you the secret, there's one thing about World War III. It's a fight between those people who believe that the creation had a purpose. What is the purpose? There was a God, infinite God, that created that universe for one purpose and one purpose only. His desire to share with us, his creatures, his children. A lot of people, I think most of humanity, is not aware of that enough yet. And all the pressure, all the stress, all the troubles are all about one thing. Till humanity is giving birth to that idea that we understand that the world was created for a purpose, and the purpose is that we, God's children, will receive God's fulfillment and light and pleasure because it's our birthright. And the only way we can find our peace, our victories or success, or whatever, fulfillment, you just name it. Whatever we really crave deep inside for is to get that fulfillment. But that can happen only when we understand that everything we see around us is part of a long process of evolution that has a purpose. It's not random. There's something, there's an idea, there's a desire, there's a will. That will is symbolized by the number 780. And as I said, we started that decade 6 years ago, 55,780, 780, tens of few or ten emanations, and the number 78. What is that number symbolizing? The will of the Creator to share the love of the Creator for his children, for his creatures. That needs to be revealed. World War III is about that. So you can find, on one end, more and more people that reveal the will of God, that this will is behind everything that happens around us, to us, for us. Okay, and that is the purpose. When you discover that, or the extent of that discovery, this is the extent of the redemption that you as a human being can experience. Okay? The dark side of humanity are those people who did not discover that. So they div are divided into two. One is the part that denies any kind of godliness in the universe. Everything is just random, just random. And therefore, there's no purpose. Therefore, the universe started from an infinite power that has no purpose. A dumb. It's dumb because the moment he doesn't have power, who doesn't have purpose? Only babies and people are really are insane. They have no purpose. Okay. The source of the creation had a purpose. That purpose was there from the beginning. That purpose is there in every particle till today. That purpose is symbolized by the number 780. That purpose is revealing in front of our eyes. So we have those people who deny that there is any purpose. And the reason the Talmud is saying, why do people deny there's a purpose? If there's no purpose, there's no creator. If there's no creator, there's no king. If there's no king, there are no rules. If there are no real rules, we can do whatever we feel like doing. Sorry, there are rules. And you have to obey those rules. And the rules are, if you want to achieve fulfillment and happiness, you need to be a creator. You need to be independent. You need to be a giver. You need to create your own happiness. You cannot create it for somebody else. You cannot wait and complain that somebody else has to do it for you. Basically, that's the idea of communism. The state will create it for you. You don't have to excel. You don't have to compete. You don't have to overcome. The state will do that for you. What a lousy idea. That idea is against the creation. And therefore, already in 1930, Rabbi Aschlag predicted the fall of the Soviet communist idea. It took 60 years, right? 60 years exactly. In 1990, that was over. Now they're trying to revive that idea again. Why? I don't have to be a creator. I don't have to be the givers. No, the society must give me. I'm not responsible to give to society. I'm not responsible to create my own happiness. And if I'm happy and I'm creative, it's against equality. How can you make everybody equal? By making everybody poor. That's the easiest way. That's why every communist society became poor. It's the easiest way to make everybody equal. But that cannot have any life of itself. And the other idea is those people who do say there is a God, but there is a purpose. But the purpose is that we are the right ones, and we are the ones closer to God, and therefore we have the right to kill, destroy, occupy, take, rob everybody who's not believing in our God. That's totally again. You're missing the point. That point, the point, we all came from the same God. We all came from the same point. We all supposed to be redeemed. No one will be left behind. Only if you re understand the number 780, And that number means that giving, sharing unconditional grace, love, compassion, fulfillment to every living creature, to every soul, every part of the creation. That is the idea. It's universal. The love is universal, not just for certain people. Okay? That idea is missing the point, missing the point. So we will be watching the rise and fall of these two concepts that they're basically today, they made kind of, what's the word? An alliance to fight the first idea, the idea that there is a purpose and the purpose is infinitely good. Okay? This is World War III. You have to make the choice. Which side are you taking? Thank you, everybody, and have an amazing year of study and growth in the coming year. Thank you so much.